Tuesday the 2nd of February, Yud Ches Shvat, Dr. Meir Wickler, Rediscovering the Lost Art of Hakaras HaTov.
It was during some of the darkest days during World War II, just inside occupied Europe, in an abandoned farmhouse, late at night, a handful of terrified Jewish families were huddled in the darkness and the cold, hoping and praying that their life savings that they had given to a goy who had promised to ferris them across the border was not in vain. In the middle of the night, the turn came for one of the young families, had a small infant son with them, to go. They were told it was their turn. They grabbed up the baby boy, rushed out to the wagon. The hay was thrown on top of them, and the wagon driver took off. They were bumping along for an hour or so until they could finally stop just for a moment to take a breath. The mother took the baby out of her blanket, unwrapped him to feed him, to change him, and to her shock and horror she saw that the infant that she had with her was not a baby boy, it was a baby girl. In the confusion and the commotion of what had happened, somehow her baby got switched with someone else's baby. She didn't have her son with her. It was too late to go back. It was too dangerous to go back. It was impossible to go back. They had no choice but to go forward. They went ahead. Baruch Hashem, they survived. They escaped occupied Europe. They made it to these shores in this country and resettled here in England. Approximately 20 years later, they were at a chasana. They sat down at the reception. They met another family, also survivors of the Holocaust. They started talking with them. One thing led to another. Turned out they were Landsleute. They came from the same town. It didn't take much longer to determine that this couple that they were facing was a couple that was in the same farmhouse on the same night that they had escaped. And sure enough, this other couple had a baby boy that was exchanged for a baby girl. Now what do you think their reaction was when they came face to face with each other? The couple who had raised the boy as if it was their own, and the couple that raised the girl as if it was her own. What do you think their reaction was? Well, I'll tell you what my reaction would have been. I would have been furious. Why weren't you more careful? Do you know what I went through for 20 years? I didn't know if my child was alive or dead. Because of you, I didn't know. I tried, I couldn't get in touch with them. I had no way of contacting, no way of finding out. I didn't know if my child was alive or dead. I raised your child instead of mine. Couldn't you have been more careful? You know what Agmas Nefesh I went through? That's how I would have reacted. Maybe some of you as well. That's not how they reacted. The two couples looked at each other and they said, how can we ever express our debt of gratitude to you? You raised our child as if it was your own. You took in our child, a stranger, and you raised it as if it was your own child. How can we be makar tov to you for what you did for our child? And they decided the only appropriate way to express their appreciations of hakaras hatov was to arrange for a meeting between these two young people for shidduchim purposes. And yes, they met, became engaged, and got married. Now where do you see such midas of hakaras hatov? Where does this come from? Well, you know, there are many terms to describe our people. We're referred to as Hebrews. Sometimes we're called Israelites. We're called a lot of names that I wouldn't say in public. But the one term that we use to describe us most often, and we use to describe ourselves, is Jews. Where does the term Jew come from? The term Jew comes from the name Yehuda, because we're Yehudim, from Malchus Yehuda, the last kingdom of Israel. We're Jews from Yehuda. And where does the name Yehuda come from? It was the fourth son of Leah Imenu. As the Pasuk tells us in Bereishis Chavtes, Pasuk Lamed Hei, why did Leah Imenu choose the name Yehuda for her fourth son? Because she says, Apam Odes Hashem, this time I will give thanks to Hashem. Why this time? Well, she knew there were four Imaos. There were supposed to be 12 Shvatim. She knew Al Pi Ruach HaKadosh, that each one of the Imaos could expect to have three sons. Now she had a fourth son, more than she could possibly expect to be her share. Apam Odes Hashem. And she gave the name for her fourth son to express her deep felt feelings of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the name Yehuda, and it's in our name as Jews, as Jewish people, that Hakaras HaTov used to be the hallmark of a Jew, and the trademark of a Jew. Yesterday, we learned the Shira, the Shabbos Shira, not yesterday, 2 days before, was this past Shabbos, was Shabbos Shira. And Shabbos Shira is the historical declaration of Hakaras HaTov, Kal Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Beinanu L'Makom. And this coming week, we are reading Parshas Yisro. And in Parshas Yisro, we learn about the tremendous Hakaras HaTov that Moshe Rabbeinu had for his father-in-law, for Yisro. So I thought it would be appropriate, in the few minutes that we have remaining this morning, to focus on this midah of Hakaras HaTov, specifically Beinanu L'Chaveiro, between man and his fellow man. Now the title that I gave for the talk this morning is Rediscovering the Lost Art of Hakaras HaTov. Why do I say rediscovering? Why is it called the lost art? Why am I referring it to it as a lost art? I want to give you a brief case example from my own clinical practice. There was a young bacher from a fine yeshiva and a fine family who was having a little difficult time with shidduchim. Someone suggested maybe you should meet with a therapist. Maybe there's something you're doing or not doing that's interfering. When you're meeting the young ladies, it's not going so well. Talk it over with a professional. He came to meet with me. We identified certain areas for him to work on. And in a short while, a couple of months, he called me up with the Besura Torah, Dr. Wickler, I'm engaged. Oh, mother, I was so excited. I was happy for him. He said, I'm not planning to cancel my next appointment. I'm planning to come in and meet you in person to thank you. But I just wanted to tell you right away on the phone, we just had the Vort, the Chaim, and I wanted to share the Besura Torah with you. Finally, he came in for his final appointment. He expressed his appreciation to me. And then I asked him, just matter-of-factly, I said, by the way, I appreciate very much that you're thanking me, but did you thank your parents as well? He said, my parents? Why should I be thanking my parents? Why should you be thanking your parents? I said, young man, every week when you came to meet with me, and you paid the fee with a check, I noticed the check wasn't your check. The check was signed by your parents. They were paying for my services. If you felt it was helpful, the work that we did together, don't you think you owe them a debt of Hakaras HaTov and thanking them? He said, you know, it never occurred to me. I said, well, as soon as I leave your office, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm not going to wait till I go home, I'm going to call them up, and I'm going to thank them. You're 100% right. Today we see that Hakaras HaTov seems to be somewhat of a lost art. Children are not thanking parents, and there's so much that parents do for children. I don't have to mention to you. And children certainly have a lack of Hakaras HaTov. But parents also need to be Makar Tov to children. Children do chores, they do things around the house, they help out, they do things. They also are entitled to Hakaras HaTov. And we're talking about the B'nai Bayis. It's not just parents and children that have to be Makar Tov to each other. It's also husbands and wives. My dear friend, Rabbi Pesach Krohn, who was instrumental in my coming here to speak with you this morning, has an expression that I like to say over in his name. He says that if women want to be appreciated for the challahs that they bake, they have to make sure to appreciate the dough that the husband makes. Children don't thank parents, parents don't thank children, and no one likes to be taken for granted. So how can we rediscover this lost art of a Kurus HaTov that used to be the trademark of our people and why we are referred to as Jews? I'd like to mention 2 points this morning as ways that we can rediscover this lost art of a Kurus HaTov. The first is that when we're expressing gratitude, we have to remember that we need to express gratitude even for little things, not just the big ticket items. You saved my life, you gave me a loan. Even little things that we do for each other need to be acknowledged. I mentioned Leah Imenu before, I want to mention Rachel Imenu now. When she had a son, her first son, and she chose a name for her son, she called him Yosef. And the Pasuk says, Bereishis Lamed Pasuk Chof Gimel, she said, Asaf Elokim Escher Posi, Hashem has gathered up my shame. I'm no longer a barren woman. I'm no longer a childless woman. I have a son. I became a mother. Hashem has gathered up my shame. I'm calling him Yosef. What does that mean, gathering up the shame? So Rashi says on that Pasuk, that sometimes there could be a mishap at home, a dish breaks, there's some treats that are missing, and a mother of a small child can say, it's the baby that took it. So she doesn't have to be embarrassed, she can blame it on the small child. There's always things that go wrong when there's a small child at home, blame it on the child. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz Zatzal asks what I call an embarrassing question on this Rashi. What's embarrassing about his question? The embarrassment of the question is that when you hear his question, you will feel embarrassed. How come I never thought of that when I learned that Rashi? How come it didn't occur to me? You'll feel embarrassed, as I did when I first heard this Rashi. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks, that's all Rachel Imenu had to thank Hashem for? Of all the myriad reasons why she should be thankful, to finally have a child after davening for so many years, to be able to contribute to the Shiftei Kah, to take her rightful place as a matriarch for Klal Yisrael. That's all she has to thank Hashem for, is now that a figs are missing or a dish breaks, I have someone to blame it on, so I don't have to take the embarrassment myself. That's all she has to thank Hashem for. And that's the name she chooses for her son, and she's going to call him this name forever? So Chaim Shmulevitz says, Chas v'shalom. Rachel Imenu was one of the Imos. She had much higher hasagas. She had much deeper appreciation. She knew what it meant to build Klal Yisrael, to add a sheva to the Shiftei Kah. That's what she wanted. That's what she was grateful for, that Hashem answered her tefillos. But Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, in the long, long, long list of reasons why she was grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the very bottom of the list was this reason that Rashi mentions, that if there's something that goes wrong at home, she can blame it on the child. Now, when she's choosing a name for her son, she doesn't want to choose the name that's going to reflect the top reason, because that she's never going to forget. She chooses a name for her son that represents the bottom reason, the smallest reason, even for that tiny benefit that she gets having a child, that she has someone she can attribute if something goes wrong at home, to the infant. That's the name she chooses for her son, and that's the name she always wants to remember him by. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal used to spend his summers in Camp Or Shraga. And he davened, of course, for Shteitzach in the front of the Beis Medrash. And one Shabbos afternoon, instead of exiting the Beis Medrash in the front, there was a door on the side of the Aron Kodesh to go back to his bungalow for Shalosh Shudas. He turned around and walked all the way to the back of the Beis Medrash, in the opposite direction. It was unusual. Where is he going? Why isn't he going out to Shalosh Shudas? He never walks that way before. He walked through the whole sea of Bochrim to the very back of the Beis Medrash, and there was a young bar mitzvah boy, couldn't have been more than bar mitzvah, was there in the camp, trembling as the Rosh Hashiva came over to him, and came right up to him and said, I have to give you a shikoyach, I have to thank you. Thank me? What does the Rosh Hashiva thanking you for? said, to thank you for your etzah that you gave me this morning. It was very helpful, and I appreciate it very much. And now there was a big crowd, you can understand, gathering around. What etzah could this bar mitzvah bacher have given the gadol hador? So the bacher was confused. He said, show the Rosh Hashiva. I didn't give the Rosh Hashiva any etzah this morning. I don't know what, Rashi must be confusing me with somebody else. He says, no, I remember it was you. Don't you remember after davening this morning, you came over to ask me a shayla? I asked the shayla, but I didn't give the Rashi an etzah. You asked me a shayla this morning. You came over to me after davening and you asked, is it mutter on Shabbos to use talcum powder? And I answered you, of course. There's no issa malacha in applying talcum powder. It's not a cream. It's not a salve. It's a powder. You can put it on your skin and you can rub it in. There's no issa. There's no malacha. There's no chashash of any av malacha, told of malacha. There's no malacha at all in using talcum powder on Shabbos. So yes, I remember. But I don't remember the eitz that I gave the Rosh Hashiva. He said, well, when you asked me that shayla, I was thinking to myself, why is this bachar asking if you can use talcum powder on Shabbos? Because it's hot, and it's sticky, and they didn't have air conditioner in those days. And it was very uncomfortable. And the Rashi was thinking, he wants to put some talcum powder on to freshen up, to cool off. And the Rashi thought, you know, I have talcum powder in my bungalow. I could also put on talcum powder. It would make me feel better. And he went back, he put some talcum powder on, and he felt a little more refreshed on a hot, muggy, sticky day in the summer. So he said, because you asked me that, Shaila, I have to be makir tov to you for giving me the etzah. The bacha says, but I didn't intend to give the Rosh Hashiva an etzah. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the Gadol HaDor, said, it doesn't matter what your intention was. You gave me an etzah, it was helpful. I have a chiyuv to be makir tov to you, and I want to thank you. That's etzah number one. To be makir tov even for the little things. Even if it wasn't intentional, you benefited from it, you have a chiyuv to say thank you to somebody else for it. That's etzah number one. Etzah number two is that I think we have to learn to give what I call partial credit. I want to explain that term. When I was a bachur in yeshiva and the Rebbe announced the bechina, my classmates and I always had three questions. Same three questions. Is it going to be an open Gemara test or a closed Gemara test? We always thought an open Gemara test would be easier. We could look up the answer if we didn't know it. Those are always the hardest ones. Second question we had was, is it going to be multiple choice or fill-in? Is it going to be choose A, B, C, D? Or you have to write in the answer? We always felt the multiple choice questions would be easier because if you didn't know, at least you could guess. But those are always the harder two. The third question we had is, when the Rebbe grades the Bechinas, is the Rebbe going to use partial credit or not? And what does that mean? That meant, let's say the correct answer was Beis Hillel. And I wrote Beis Shammai. So the Rebbe shouldn't take off all 10 points. So I knew the sugya. I didn't say Abaya. I didn't say Rava. I got mixed up Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, but I had reviewed the Gemara. I'm not complete. Idiot and Amoritz. So don't take off all 10 points. Give me 5 points, 2 points. Give me partial credit. So when the tests were graded, the Bechinas were graded, we wanted the Rebbe to give us partial credit. Well, Rabosai, we have to learn to give our B'nai Bias partial credit. We have to give them partial credit for the chores they do. Someone goes shopping, whether it's a child, whether it's a spouse, and they didn't come home with everything you wanted. Something is missing. But they got everything else. So you give them credit for what they did. You still needed something that wasn't there, but at least appreciate what was done. I was speaking about this topic once when I spoke about Sholem Bias, husband and wife, and I gave this explanation that I just gave you this morning about partial credit. And after the talk was over, a woman came over to me and said, Dr. Wickler, I was very impressed with your talk this evening, but that topic that you raised about partial credit, I want you to know, it went through me like a knife. I thought, well, that's an unusual way of putting it. I could understand if she said she thought it was insightful or informative or even entertaining, but it went through her like a knife. I didn't know what she was talking about. She said, let me explain. She said she works part-time, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. She only has Thursday and Friday to prepare for Shabbos. 2 weeks ago, they had sleepover guests. She was very nervous. They don't even have company on Shabbos because she doesn't have that much time to prepare. But they had guests coming, and she was nervous. She came down Friday morning, and she was anxious. She had a lot to do. It's a short Friday. And lo and behold, she couldn't believe. She came down, and she saw the entire dining room table was set. The china, cutlery, stemware, everything was out on the table. Challah board, challah knife, everything. And then she noticed that the napkins, the paper napkins that they use, the tissues, called serviettes, excuse me, I'm trying to learn the language here. The serviettes were the simple weekday serviettes that they use during the week, and not the fancy ones they use on Shabbos. Then she goes into the kitchen, she looks at the urn, the kumkum, and she sees it wasn't plugged in. It was filled up, wasn't plugged in. Now, she realized her husband had gotten up early before davening to give her a hand, but look at those things he missed. He came home from shul after davening Friday morning. The first thing she says to him, where have you been living all these years? Don't you know we don't use these serviettes on Shabbos? These are weekday serviettes? But what were you thinking? And not only that, I went into the kitchen and I checked the urn. It wasn't even plugged in. Could you imagine what a chorban it would have been if we had no hot water for Shabbos for guests, no tea, no coffee the next morning? I would have been embarrassed. We're having sleepover guests for Shabbos, not a drop of hot water. It's a good thing I noticed it. The husband waited till she was finished. He said, first of all, I want you to know that I filled up the urn and I didn't plug it in on purpose. We have a small urn that cooks the water very hot, and sometimes the water gets cooked out. And I was afraid if I plugged it in Friday morning, by the time Shabbos comes in, half it will be cooked out. I wouldn't have enough hot water for Shabbos. So I was planning to plug it in when I came home from work this afternoon. That's as far as the urn goes. As far as the serviettes go, that's all you noticed about the table? That I used the wrong serviettes? That's all you noticed when you came down this morning? You saw the dining room table? She didn't answer. He didn't say anything else. He went to work. She went about her business. They had a beautiful Shabbos. She didn't mention it again. He didn't mention it again. She forgot all about the episode until she came to hear my talk. And then I understood. It went through her like a knife. And she said to me, I want you to know the first thing I'm going to do when I come home tonight, Dr. Wickler, is I'm going to go over to my husband and apologize to him for being so unappreciative. After all that he did to try to help me prepare for Shabbos, and all I could mention is he used the wrong serviettes at the table. Now this is many years ago, Rabosai. And speaking of Akara Satov, I have still not received a check in the mail from that husband. But I have not yet given up hope that maybe he'll listen to the tape of this year and maybe he'll be reminded that it was because of my talk that he got the apology from his wife, and maybe the check will still come. I haven't given up hope. So let's review what we learned this morning, and I'm going to end with one final story. If we want to recapture, rediscover the lost art of Akara Satov, we have to remember that we have to express our gratitude benan lo chavero, even for the little things, the small toivas, that we have to appreciate and acknowledge so that people don't feel they're taken for granted. The small things like Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky Zetzal, who thanked the Bacher for his Eitzah that came through the Shaila that he asked, or Rachel Imenu, that gave the name Yosef for her son. And we also have to remember that when it comes to the B'nai Bayis, we have to give each other partial credit. It's not exactly the way you wanted. Someone didn't fulfill your wishes to the T, but they made an effort, and efforts need to be acknowledged, even if they're not perfect. I promised you one final story. And maybe this shows that the art of Hakaras HaTov is not completely lost. A number of years ago, there was a legendary pediatrician in the New York area, Dr. Lenny Sakharov of Hashalom. He was nifter a few years ago. And recently, his almana received an anonymous phone call. And the caller called up and said, "Are you Mrs. Sakharov?" She said, "Yes." Wife of the former Dr. Lenny Sakharov, she said, "Yes." She said, "Where is your husband buried?" Mrs. Sakharov said, "He's buried in Eretz Israel." And the woman said, but where is he buried?" She said, "Well, he's buried in the Beis HaChaim in Beit Shemesh." And the woman called her at the other end, she said, "But where is he buried?" So Mrs. Sakharov said, "Well, are you asking for the row number and the plot number of his kever?" She said, "Yes, I am." So Mrs. Sakharov said, "Well, it's not a secret. I don't mind telling you where my husband is buried. But do you mind my asking, why do you want to know exactly the location of his kever?" She said, "I don't mind at all." She said, "About 20 years ago, she gave birth to her first child, a girl, who was born with a defect in her lungs. And after a few weeks, it was determined that this little pitzula had to undergo surgery on her lungs. The woman was terrified. Her first baby. How is she going to ever go through this ordeal? Will the baby survive? Will she survive?" She was terribly anxious and worried and frightened. Couldn't imagine how they're going to operate on the lungs of such an infant. And how could such a surgery be successful? Dr. Sakharov was the pediatrician. He told the woman, "Don't worry about a thing. I will arrange for your daughter to be treated at the finest hospital in the city. I will personally arrange for the top pediatric lung surgeon to do the surgery. It's not as complicated as it sounds. The surgery will be successful. Your daughter will be fine. And you'll see, I will dance at her chasna. Everything will be fine." The woman at the other end of the line, speaking with Mrs. Sakharov, said, "I was terrified. The day of the surgery, I'm sitting in the waiting room, the hospital, trying unsuccessfully to say Tillim, tears pouring out of my eyes, thinking of my little infant on an operating table. I'm trying to daven, and I can't even see the words of the Tillim. I'm crying so much. As I'm trying to say my Tillim, I sense the presence of somebody. I tried to ignore it. I kept focusing on the Tillim, but I couldn't ignore it. I looked up and I couldn't believe it. And there was your husband. I jumped up. I said, 'Dr. Sakharov, what on earth are you doing here in the middle of the day? You must have an office waiting room full of patients waiting to see you at this time. What are you doing here at the hospital?' Said, 'I do have a full waiting room of patients waiting to see me. And I left them all because I came to be with you, because I know what you were going through. I knew how frightened you were. I knew how terrified you were. And I came just to give you a few words of encouragement now while you're waiting during the surgery to remind you that everything will be all right. I assure you, your daughter will be fine.'" Mrs. Sakharov, that little girl is a Kala. And she was getting married in a couple of weeks. And she has a younger brother who's learning in a yeshiva in Eretz Israel. And I spoke to my son on the phone. I said, "Don't even think of coming home to your sister's chasna. Don't even think of it. Until you go and invite Dr. Sakharov in person to come to that chasna. He deserves to be there. And he deserves a personal invitation from a member of our family. And you're the only one in Eretz Israel now because you're learning in yeshiva. And don't even think of getting on the plane to come home to your sister's chasna until you go to the Beis HaChayim, and you invite Dr. Sakharov to come to that chasna. He deserves a personal invitation. Mrs. Sakharov got off the phone. She felt so good. Someone remembered. A mother still remembered after 20 years the chesed that her husband had done. And that showed her the art of Hakaras HaTov is not completely lost. There are people who do remember after 20 years and are Makar Tov. And let me practice what I've been preaching to you this morning. I want to thank Danny Itzkowitz for inviting me to address you this morning, and I want to thank all of you for listening so attentively.